if you think we're on the run.
Hello everybody and welcome to another episode of the Dad's Army podcast. Christmas is almost upon us. As I'm recording this, it's less than a week and I really haven't done any Christmas shopping yet. And that is the absolute truth. I am quite secretly, well, not even secretly, I am quite worried about it, frankly. We've got a couple of special things for you this particular Christmas. Not as monumental as our Bill Pertwee interview last year, but we still got some great stuff nonetheless. The first of which are some seasonal sound effects. Take a listen to this. How about that? That's enough for a podcast in itself, if you ask me. Nothing like sleigh bells. Secondly, we've got a commentary episode coming up for you with none other than Harold Snowd. Oliver sat down with Harold recently and talked about a much acclaimed episode that Harold directed, and that's Branded, one of my favourites, but quite frankly, I think I'm saying that about every episode I talk about these days. But there you go. But before we get into that, I'd like to play you just a little clip where Dad's Army was mentioned on a Now show.
What's odd is that, as we saw at the G20, under pressure, our leaders seem to be reverting more and more to their national stereotypes.
Yes, have you noticed this? I mean, Berlusconi is a comedy Italian.
You know a vote for me? Ah, shut up your face.
Merkel is more and more a comedy German.
You will forget everything you were ever told about this referendum.
Sarkozy is a comedy rude Frenchman.
Liar.
Next thing, Alex Salmon will probably appear saying,
"We're doomed." All doomed.
Now, Dad's Army is always mentioned in the news whenever we're talking about economic doom, overzealous bank managers, anything like that. But it just made me smile all that more when I was listening to that particular show on the Tube the other day. Anyway, without any further ado, let's hand over to Oliver. You know the form by now, I'm sure. In a moment, you'll hear some music, then you'll hear a countdown. And once you hear play, press play on your DVD player or on your computer, however it is that you're watching this particular episode along with Oliver and Harold, and sit back and enjoy their observations. Have a fantastic Christmas, and we'll be back towards the end of January next year. Bye for now. Three, two, one, play.
Hello and welcome to a commentary episode of Branded, which was the 11th episode of Series 3 in Dad's Army. And I have a great honour of being joined. I think legend is a term that's overused nowadays, but I feel it's perfectly true in this case. I'm joined by the director, Harold Snowd. Harold, welcome back. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, you're more than welcome.
This episode, which is generally regarded as one of the greatest in Dad's Army history, was first broadcast on the 20th of November 1969 to 11.1 million people. And it's quite a good episode because it's got a fair amount of pathos in it. It's not it's certainly not very much of a slapstick episode, but it's quite a character-driven one. And a nice one because it features Arnold Ridley a lot more prominently than perhaps in some of the other episodes.
That's true, yes, it definitely did. And that in itself was quite interesting, actually, in a way, because John Lorry was always thought that that Arnold got more attention than he did, and he would always have this sort of hidden thing, but I mean, I say he declared it ever so often, but hidden idea, the fact that Arnold was being looked after better than he was, and he couldn't work it out because he said he's only 1 year older than I am. Why is he getting this personal attention? Why does he have a chair in the rehearsal room, a chair on location where he can sit down? I don't get offered that. And there was that sort of bit between them, you know. And this particular episode, of course, which featured Arnold a great deal, yeah. I think he was slightly, I won't use the word I was going to use, but slightly miffed
yeah.
by the fact that that was going on, you know.
Did they get on, or was it just a...
Oh, I think they got on. They got on all right. But I think there was not perhaps so much love of Arnold by... what's his name?
By John Laurie.
I couldn't think of his name.
Yeah.
By John Laurie, as the rest of the cast, you know. He just felt that he was being overlooked for Arnold by Arnold.
I mean, it's quite a good scene of John Laurie, because he's getting really into this. He's telling the platoon how to stalk. He's got a lot of energy, and also he's quite rough, isn't he? He doesn't beat about the bush. If he's going to grab someone or give someone a slap, he goes for it. I mean,
he does. Yes, yes.
Would he have put, like, here he's pushing everyone aside? Would he have developed all of this in rehearsal? Or
yes.
How much did he give? I mean, because obviously, you know, he was in his 70s. How much did he give in rehearsals, or did he save a lot of his performance up for the evening?
You've got virtually the whole thing in rehearsals. But it'll always get just slightly more when the audience is there, because, you know, it's more of a performance, because they know that there's the audience, they're the fans, and therefore they're going to, you know, work for it more than they would do in rehearsal. But everything that they did was already rehearsed. There were very few ad-lib moments at all, if any, you know, but one or two, but not many, really.
And here's the example you're talking about, where Arnold really gets to sit down in the scene and everyone's going to creep up on him. What was Arnold really like to direct? He'd obviously been around for an incredibly long time.
And he's written his own plays as well.
It
was very nice. You know, he was very nice, but they all were. You see, there was no great problem. I mean, it was very much a team thing, they all took direction very happily. There were moments when John the Measurer didn't take very kindly to any sort of change,
right?
Which is how that expression came about. Do you think that's wise? Because as soon as we'd in rehearsals, we'd say, "Oh, dang it, look, I tell you what, it might be better if we did so and so, so and so, so and so." And immediately the first voice you heard was, do you think that's wise? And it was picked up on by David and Jimmy and started to be incorporated into the script.
I've read in from other interviews that John LeMessurier was quite withdrawn in rehearsals and quite private. Is that your memory of him? Or
I don't think I find him withdrawn particularly. He was one of the worst things about John was that he was terribly impractical.
Right.
Really, really impractical. I remember on the very first day's filming, I noticed that his watch had stopped, and I said, "John, your watch has stopped." And he said, "Oh, could you wind it up for me, please?" And he was awfully impractical. And there's an episode where you probably remember, I'm sure, where Pike gets dropped into a bog and starts going down and down and down.
Oh, yes, yes.
And the whole platoon... part of the script was the whole platoon would actually rescue Pike out of this bog, gradually rescue him. And because John LeMessurier was so impractical, he was kept out of it. It was written deliberately with him getting caught up on a barbed wire fence so that he wasn't there at the time to be able to help. I had a previous experience after all this when I employed John when I was directing the Dick Embry Show, which I did for 8 years, and he had a scene, two-handed scene, between him and Dick, and he had to stand at the end of the bed with a revolver and point at Dick, who was in the bed, and his line to Dick was, "Hand over the jewellery." So we were rehearsing this, I set the camera up and all the rest of it, and he said, "Hand over that." Just a minute, Harold, he said, "How am I going to take the jewellery when I'm holding this revolver?" And I said, "You use your other hand, John." And he went, he looked at his left hand, and he said, "Oh, yeah, yeah." And that just about summed up how impractical he was. You know?
That's absolutely fantastic. One thing I noticed when watching this episode the other day is normally that door where John has come out of leads onto the set that they've just left. But if you look carefully, I think we see it in a minute when Arnold Ridley walks in. It actually leads to the set that we'll see later on for the training. It's the set where the smoke-filled hut is. It's not the church hall set for some reason.
No, I hadn't noticed that, to be honest. Well, perhaps I had, but I hadn't skipped over that. Look at it.
I mean, could that have been because the scene that's coming up with all the smoke and everything was quite a technical thing? Would a certain set be moved to the centre of the stage?
Oh, it probably was, yes. Perhaps it was built inside. Because sometimes sets are not taken down, like the church hall, during the performance. That would take a hell of a lot of taking down. But usually some sets are put up inside that one, if you see what I mean.
Right.
In the same way as they are in the theatre, you know. But what you may hang on, this is just going out now. Oh, we're not going to see him.
I think, Arthur goes and works out what Honor Ridley's done. He's been making the tea, and so he's far too valuable.
Yeah.
Well, was it a challenge? I mean, this office, of course, features in most episodes of Dad's Army. Was it a challenge if you're directing multiple episodes in the same sets to come up with anything fresh or new? Or were you quite happy with what you had and your focus is on the performance?
Well, it's a difficult one, actually. I mean, if the fact that, the plot has a lot to do with it, of course, of what is actually happening there.
Mm.
But it can be, even plot-wise...
Do you see that?
I see what you mean. Yes.
And you've carefully put up some coats to make it look like it's the church hall, but it is in fact that's the edge of the building.
Yeah, that's about well spotted. I hadn't noticed that before. Really.
Yeah. So,
but going back to what we were saying, it is quite difficult sometimes. I mean, if we're going on to keeping our appearances again, I mean, the number of scenes that we had where Hyacinth invited Elizabeth round for coffee.
Yeah.
And if you're not very careful, you're doing the same business all the time. And I put in masses. I mean, there's about 28 scenes altogether, I think, between the two of them.
Yeah.
And I put in a lot of comedy, farcical type comedy, which suited them. They're both very good farcers, Joe Tewson and her. And that helped enormously over and above just sitting there and telling a plan for the day or whatever. You know.
Yeah.
No, I don't think it matters that it's the same set. It's what's happening in the set that's the important thing.
It's quite a... I think it's a sitcom where people like to be on familiar ground. It's that sort of comfortable thing to watch. Whereas this is arguably the best example of an episode that is outside of a normal comfort zone, because we've got a bit of character development here when it's revealed that Private Godfrey was a conscientious objector, which is an amazing dramatic moment, really, particularly this stage in Dad's Army, only being the third season. How is it for you as a director when you have a moment that's coming up where there's no laughs for probably a good minute, where it gets quite serious? How important is it for you then, after that, to try and get a really good laugh, perhaps to bring the audience back? Or what are your aims?
It's always difficult like that. Sometimes you do in any series, you have a minute or two that really gets quite serious and intense and all the rest of it. And of course, I mean, if the material is good enough, the audience are locked in on it as well. But the trouble is, sometimes, not here, but I mean, sometimes you have sitcoms these days that the material isn't all that good, and therefore they are waiting for a laugh.
So here, Godfrey's just revealed that he was a conscientious objector. This is quite a serious scene in terms of Dad's Army. What's it like if you're throwing in quite a dramatic scene here to then carry on with the business of comedy? I mean, what are your challenges as a director?
Well, I think it can work. I mean, it obviously depends on the writing to a great extent, but I think it does work, providing... and this doesn't necessarily always apply, but providing 9 times out of 10, the same person who's just been very serious doesn't suddenly come involved in the comedy. And what usually happens is that with a lot of shows, and especially this one, this is a very good example of it, you have serious stuff for a moment, but then when you go to the comedy, it's with different people in the same show. It's not the same character suddenly trying to be funny.
You're quite right, and the next scene we go to, there's been a bit of passage of time. I think we establish half an hour has passed, and that Godfrey's gone home with tears in his eyes. And so, yes, I suppose you'd then just get back to the normal business. But I think this is a very very strong episode of Dad's Army because of the fact that they felt that they'd established the characters and they could think outside the box. And I think that's why it's a strong comedy. It's not just the same gags all the time.
There's an element of pathos about it as well. Yeah. Sort of sympathy for, you know, whose side are you on, actually? You know?
Yeah, yeah. I think Arthur Lowe is very, very good when he's quite defiant about
something. Oh, he is. Yeah, he is very much. Is he?
Strong,
strong character and whatnot. Yeah. And, of course, that plays off against John Lemez, who's sort of, slightly out of his... depth in a way.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
He's just waiting for instructions or observations or whatever. I mean, very serious, very seldom does John Lemez's character really come up with a useful idea.
Yes.
In the whole series, you know what I mean? He just goes along with what he has to go along with, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Now, coming up in a moment, we've got the Jones's out of time drill, which is possibly the most repeated gag in Dad's Army. How do you go about making sure that is continually funny if it happens every episode? And I mean, I noticed in this one he looks rather guilty about it, whereas another one he wouldn't notice that he'd done anything wrong.
No, I don't know why we chose him to look guilty in that particular one, but. Was it relevant to what's been said earlier? Perhaps he thought that he was going to get elbowed because his drill wasn't as good as it should have been. I don't know.
And that's a lovely touch there, but he just decided to move
along,
Wilson from one side to the other. And he got a great laugh without
oh, yes, indeed,
really happening.
Yeah.
I like this scene with Arthur standing on a small box
to
set up Bill. And this is a great example of Bill Pertwee sort of underperforming. He plays this so cool. I think he's so funny when he's almost hardly doing anything.
No, he's very good.
Yeah, he's very, very good. But did they... I mean, obviously the characters don't get on, but were they good friends in real life?
I think so. Bill Pertwee was the godfather of one of our daughters. So.
Oh, really? Oh, wonderful.
Yeah.
Was there a real sense... I mean, it's gone on record, I think, that in Thetford, the cast and crew all socialised and in the hotel. But what was it like after a performance at that television centre? I mean, did people socialise after a recording of
the
show?
Yeah, we used to go up to the BBC Club and have a drink afterwards and discuss how it went and that sort of thing.
Yeah,
we all did that and whatnot, and I think you still do to this day, really, in shows like that.
This is one of the funniest gags in the episode. Bill stands right above. How tall was the set? Because, I mean, obviously, Bill's quite high up there. I mean, there's still plenty above.
Yeah.
But was it quite a tall set?
Well, they've got to be fairly high, because if you're on a wide shot, then you've got to... You know, it's not as if you're in a close-up or two shots, but if you're in a wide shot, then obviously you could come off the top of it anyway. So you've got to... You know, it's probably quite high. It's probably up to about... 12-14 feet,
right. This is a really nice scene of camaraderie here between four of the characters, obviously to build up before Godfrey comes in and we get back to the animosity. The banter between Pike and the older members of the platoons a really nice touch. And in the background here, that falling off, that coat stand, was that scripted or was it something that might have happened by accident?
You know, I don't know. I was watching this again the other day and I couldn't remember whether that was scripted or not.
Yeah.
I don't really see why it should have been.
No.
I'm sure they'd have made a bit more out of it or if it had been, you know. So I suspect that we just let it go and think, well, it's not worth going back and doing a retake for that, you know.
Yeah, James Beck covered it well. If it was a mistake and did a nice sort of double take.
Yeah, as if, oh Lord, this thing's fallen off the wall.
Yeah,
again.
But it's a really, really nice touch. Pike's scarf. Later on in the series, he had a sort of a regular scarf, but earlier on, he seems to have a different coloured scarf. every episode.
Well, it's whatever mummy had available at the time, wasn't it? Really,
she just knitted, yes.
Yeah. I think you'll find at the end of the credits of every episode when they're all walking down, or is it the start? I can't remember now. I think it's the end. The scarf that he's wearing there, he didn't have one that day. I think you'll find it's actually really a towel.
Oh, really? Oh, right. Yeah. we didn't have a prop.
No.
Oh,
the property, you know, the wardrobe department had somehow overlooked it or something.
Yeah.
Oh. But nobody ever knew, so keep that yourself.
Yeah, sure. But those great, I mean, the costumes are absolutely fantastic and so authentic. I mean,
they are very authentic.
Would these guys have been pretty hot? Would it have been hot in the studio? Would it have been quite warm wearing these?
I think they would have found it pretty hot. Frankly, it's a question I've never been asked before, and I don't think they've ever raised it.
Yeah.
So I don't think they got, you know, they were too intense on acting to worry about if they got a bit too hot.
Yeah.
I don't think it would have been that hot in the studio also, quite frankly. Unless we had a very highly lit scene. Well, this certainly isn't highly lit to that extent, you know.
No. This is one of the moments of pathos we're talking about here.
It's quite moving, actually.
It is. And I think Arnold plays it very, very nicely in a moment where he takes out the cake and eats it on his own. But it's a really... And it's also a regular theme. Any scene of animosity in Dad's Army, that John Laurie is right at the centre of it, of stirring, the bad vibe. And it's a really nice moment here where Jimmy Beck almost, it looks like he wants to talk to him, but he knows that he's in with the lad, so he can. But I think that's a really nicely acted and directed scene.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
It's really, really good and sets us up here for what I suppose is the best remembered scene of this episode.
Probably, yes.
It's quite a large set piece. And I believe this is an actor you've worked with a number of times. It's Stuart Sherwin?
Stuart Sherwin, yes. I've used him quite a lot in... I think the last time was in Keeping Up Appearances.
Yeah. And was he an actor... How would you have first met Stuart? Would you have worked with him either on stage or in
his career? No, it was... I'd worked with him before this, I think. But I must have been. I can't remember what it was. We are still going back a number of years, I keep on saying, but
Well, this is his I think he did four episodes as the same character, although I believe this is the first one, so you got him a nice gig there by casting him.
Yes. Assistant or warden, or second warden, I think is the official title.
So now this is obviously it's a scene, it's shot in the studio, but they're clearly meant to be outside. And why shoot a scene like this in the studio as opposed to doing it on location?
Because it was quite complicated, and we thought it would be better to do it inside where we had more control than outside. I mean, when you're filming out on location, you have to edit the whole thing together afterwards, whereas here you cut from one camera to another as you're going along, which... if it's a complicated sequence, as this did become at one point, then it's probably easier to do it this way around. And also, this is quite a long scene, so if you do it outside, your studio audience has got missing quite a large chunk, you know.
Yeah. And I suppose, presumably on location, it's single camera shooting.
Yes.
You'd have a lot more to do. How would you have gone about actually blocking this sequence? It's very long. You've got 17 members of the platoon in there, a smoke-filled hut, a ladder for them to climb over. I mean, how do you even begin working out how this scene's going to work?
Well, only by referring to the script and following it through. There's nothing else you can do, really. I mean, you know, and also experience comes into it, of course. But you know, the script is the basis of what is going to happen. And therefore, you just follow it through and make it happen. And it sounds simple, but and it isn't simple, but it, you know, it works.
It's quite a moment where Bill Pertwee yells and swears at Pike. It's quite a. It's probably the angriest he gets in the entire series.
Yeah, I think so.
Very sort of frustrated at the platoon. What's I mean, Bill Pertwee, I it's been well documented. He started off as a warm-up actor before actually joining the main cast in the first episode. What's Bill like as an actor to direct?
He's fine. He's good. He's very professional, which is already really what you're looking for, is somebody who's talented and professional. We had a good cast all around. This is where the people go in there and come out supposedly with a body, which is just a straw, sort of sack full of straw.
This is very, very funny moment.
Yeah, this is a nice moment, isn't it? This is where Arthur goes in the other side, unaware that Clive was coming in this side. Yes. Arthur's always did the stuff with his glasses and his hat askew. I mean, he didn't have to direct him to do that. He knew when to do it, and he was very good.
Yeah. I mean, how much smoke really would have been in there? I mean, presumably it's just visible.
There's more outside there, that tub, than there was inside.
Yeah.
But there was some inside, obviously, because you'd have to see it when you open the flaps either side to get them out.
I imagine it would have been quite a...
It was a funny scene in a moment when they get Clive out. He comes out and he suddenly forgets that he's forgotten... Or he remembers that he's forgotten the figure, so he has to go back again.
Okay.
And he's supposed to go back crawling in, and Bill Pertwee stops him. And usually, just in rehearsals, grabbed onto his leg, but in this particular instance, he didn't go up quite loud. His hand sort of shot up to his groin. And as you can see just there, Bill laughed.
Yes.
And although it was a serious situation, but he couldn't stop himself just laughing for a moment, briefly. at the fact that he'd got in this rather embarrassing position with Clive.
Is that, I mean, at that moment there, I mean, obviously it's quite a big set piece. Would, rather than go back and redo that, do you have to decide if it works?
If it works. I left it because I thought it did work, quite frankly.
Yeah, it was quite funny.
And I don't think anybody's ever really noticed to that extent, possibly, that Bill, I mean, it was only fleeting, about 2 seconds, you know.
Yeah.
That he got a smile on his face.
Yeah.
But it wasn't worth redoing for the sake of that, quite frankly.
No. And it does work because it is a this is a great line, no smoking in there, Walker.
Yes.
It's fantastic. but I like the fact that Walker keeps the cig anyway.
Yes.
He takes it in with him, doesn't take a blind bit of notice. Yeah. Now, this is the moment where the episode builds up to. The fact that Mannering still doesn't regard, we're still not very happy with Godfrey and wants him out. And so shortly we're in a position where that's a great great gag.
That was me, I think.
I mean, were you ever concerned about someone like John Laurie climbing up that ladder?
No, not really. No, he had quite a lot of energy and whatnot, you know, and it was all right. It was safe. The ladder was very securely attached to what is a very strong fence.
Yeah.
You didn't see, you know, it doesn't...
No, it doesn't wobble
around
there.
No. Like that, you know?
No, it's very good. The sets were always good on Dad's Army, weren't they? I mean,
didn't have any... Good design and whatnot.
Yeah.
Made sure that it all worked.
And so this is a nice moment here. You've built up all the excitement and all the yelling and all that, and now something was very quiet.
Yes.
When Godfrey's concerned about...
Where's he gone? Where is he?
Yeah, yeah.
What's happened?
Nice bit of drama. He plays it very well, Arnold.
He does. There's
real concern there. and he's brave, you know. He goes for it, and he gets down on his knees and does what everyone else does, which...
This was a nice tag to the whole thing, a complete change, you know.
Yeah.
Where they'd all gone off him.
Yeah.
And now suddenly he's the big day, big thing, a big moment. And they actually all come in to visit him and congratulate him.
Yeah, it's absolutely lovely to
see. Make sure he's all right.
There's an actor called Roger Avon, who I think popped up in... Doctor Who not long after this episode.
Oh, did she?
And Nan Braunton there. She I think she did at least 2 or 3 episodes as Godfrey's sister. But then Joan Lowe took over her part. I'm not sure why, but towards the end of Dad's Army.
I can't remember why either, to be honest.
But it's a really, it's just quite fun having all of a platoon in this quite small room.
Oh yes, I remember the cramped circumstances of that. Built quite deliberately, so it was, you know.
Yeah. And it's a really nice, but you know, the whole plot comes
yeah,
full
it's a nice
circle.
Tag for the whole thing.
Yeah. No, it's a very strong story. This one, I think, and it's very very well regarded. By the fans, and it is a rare example. There weren't many episodes that did this where there wasn't a later episode where Walker is believed to be like a spy, and he's helping. I think it's an episode you directed, actually. Don't Fence Me In, where he's helping POWs escape, apparently, but he's in fact got them working in his workshop. So obviously, you know, they thought if we need a bit of pathos, a bit of drama, or as I said when we looked at The Lion Has Foams, you've got an epic quality that your episode are like mini movies.
Yeah.
We obviously thought... how did you get the opportunity to be directing Dad's Army whilst working on the show? How did that come about?
Oh, just because David Koff wanted to give me a chance.
Mm.
You know, he presumably saw that I could do it and thought he'd give me an opportunity.
Yeah, yeah.
And I had directed this one episode of Hugh and I Spy for him before. So he was perfectly happy to let me take over.
Yeah. it's quite a...
He's very nice like that. I mean, he's very generous and pleasant and nice. And all that.
That's right. I mean, for him, you know, for what is their show, for there's clearly no ego there or anything like that. You know, they're happy
I agree.
The opportunity.
I mean, in fairness, it sounds big-headed, but I mean, he wouldn't have let me done it if I wasn't able to deliver the goods.
Of course.
But he had faith, you know, which is very nice, and fortunately I was able to deliver the goods.
How important for your career was Dad's Army?
Well, I don't know if it was specifically important for my career, but it did give me a chance, let's face it, to direct these seven episodes, and therefore I suppose you could say it's my sort of first step, bar the Hugh and I Spy thing, on the ladder, and I assume that... The higher tree that the BBC actually took note of that and gave me the opportunity, or promoted me subsequently. So it must have been good for me.
Yeah. Well, there we are. That's the end of Branded. And I think coming up now, we'll see the makeshift scarf that you pointed out earlier on Ian. Oh, yeah. There we go. Yes, you're quite right. But it's some kind of tea towel or something,
isn't it?
Yes, it is. Yeah. That's fantastic. Well, yeah, that's a really strong episode of Dad's Army. It's a bit different. It has drama in there.
Yeah, it's got the drama, the pathos, and whatnot. And yeah.
Yeah. No, very strong episode. Thank you for joining us once again, Harold. And
you're more than welcome.
And there you are. There's your name over that wonderful home guard.